Hey, what it do, sports fans? Welcome to the Sports Live podcast brought to you by Multimedia Live. I'm Swoom Jigeliso, your host, and I will be joined by various guests on this exciting new podcast to discuss the latest ins and outs of the sporting world. Another amazing weekend of sport is behind us. The South African netball ladies made the semi-finals of the Netball World Cup, but were unfortunately knocked out by Australia, and they went down to England in the battle for third place as well. Sadly, Norma Plummer's ladies will not come back from Liverpool with a medal, but they certainly did the country proud. It is by far their best performance at the showpiece, and it should set the platform for a strong showing at the 2023 World Cup, which we are hosting in Cape Town later on. That's about 2023. Algeria are now the African champions after they beat Senegal 1-0 in the Africa Cup of Nations final in Egypt to cap a wonderful tournament for them, led by their former player Jamel Belmadi. They captured their second AFCON title following up on their win in 1990 when they hosted the tournament. Back here in South Africa, it seems as if the knives are out for Bafana Bafana coach Stuart Baxter, who many believe should vacate his post. The name on everyone's lips is of course Herve Renard, who confirmed his resignation from the Moroccan national team last week. We will see if the governing federation, SAFA, have the funds to bring in the two-time AFCON winning coach. Personally, I would like to see those funds directed towards growing the women's game and guaranteeing fair, if not equal, wages for our Banyana Banyana players. Herve Renard was reportedly on an 80,000 euro per month salary. 80,000 euro per month salary, which translates to about 1.6 million rands a month. That is also double what SAFA are said to be paying Stuart Baxter, whose contract expires in 2021. Baxter may have failed to meet his mandate to qualify for the 2018 FIFA World Cup, but he more than exceeded his mandate for the latest AFCON. Bafana Bafana qualified and made the quarterfinals, which was a stage better than Renard's Morocco. Now that's something for you to think about. Taking all of that into account and considering that every 2 years or so the national team has to start from scratch because the coach has been fired, the prudent thing to do, in my view, is to keep Baxter in his post at least until his contract expires and review from there. This buys the team and the federation time to get their financial situation straight to build a stronger footballing ecosystem as well as a strong men's national team. But hey, I'm not the sharpest shank in the penitentiary, so plenty of people will definitely disagree with my view. But I'm okay with that, and I will move on to golf. An Irishman won a major in Northern Ireland over the past weekend, capping the fairy tale dust we've been seeing in sports since England won their first Cricket World Cup at home. Shane Lowry weathered the storm quite literally to claim the British Open at Royal Portrush last Sunday, beating his nearest competitor, Tommy Fleetwood, by 6 shots. Now let me get to the main course, which is rugby and the Springboks.
Tune in to Cargumentative every Monday morning on Times Live Motoring. You can join myself, Thomas Faulkner, and my regular gang of automotive misfits as we discuss motoring news, views, and of course have a Cargument or two. That's Cargumentative only on Times Live Motoring.
To advertise on the Sports Live podcast, email us at smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. Now I can't wait till I say this is the Sports Live podcast brought to you by, this is your name, your entity, your brand, right after the Sports Live podcast. That's smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. Smith S, S-M-I-T-H-S at tisoblackstar.co.za. Wow, the Springboks really capped off an unbelievable sporting weekend when they beat the Wallabies 35-17 at Ellis Park on Saturday. I was at the game and managed to get all the reaction from both coaches as well as one returning star, one Francois Steyn. First up, Springbok coach Rassie Erasmus talking about the impact made by debutant scrum half Herschel Yanchis, who scored 2 tries and might have had a hat-trick. and the sudden traffic in his position ahead of the Rugby World Cup that was caused by replacement scrummy Kobus Reinach, who scored the final Springbok touchdown. Now, you must remember that Faf de Klerk is still the number one, number nine for the Springboks. There's still Ambrose Papier, who started tests last year. There's still Ivan Fansel, who also started tests last year. So we now have gone from pretty much zero when Rassie Erasmus took over, and we've got five.
Played for a while, and I think that came through during the game. It was a stop-start game, and certainly at stages it was a bit frustrating the way that the game went, but there was individuals without a doubt, you know, like Herschel and a few other guys that showed they're comfortable at this level, and I guess that's definitely one of the things we wanted to see. So yeah, that's very pleasing.
Forget about these two tries, but the technical thinking was really good.
Yeah, listen, you don't want to praise the guy too much, but you can't do other than praise him for the way he played tonight, because I think if you take it straight from Super Rugby or where he was last year, Currie Cup Rugby, Super Rugby, and then two Test Match Rugby, and then just the way, you know, his service, his box kicks, the technical things, and then, you know, his grit on defence, and then the way he attacked, you know, it was just awesome. So hopefully he can just grow from here. He certainly, the confidence is high now, but the opposition will just be tougher and tougher, and the World Cup lies ahead. So, but it's a great start for him, so he can be very proud of the performance. Things change in a week very quickly, you know, injury-wise and form-wise and those kind of things. So as we sit here tonight, we're really happy. Last year at stages, we were really happy with the way the other nines performed. If you take Ambrose against Scotland and, you know, even against England, you know, we had to try a few things to see who's the right guys, who fits in, you know, who can adapt to the way we want to play and do the different departments of the game, not just on attack and defense. There's so many different facets of the game, and we had to try a few things to get where we are today in terms of squad depth, not in performance and squad depth. And I think we can say at least at nine we know who is available and who can do what, and that's a good sign. So yes, I think we. If you count Ambrose and Ivan and Luis Sria, they're all the guys we've tried. We exactly know now who we have, and now it's a matter of consolidating and making sure that when we hit the World Cup, all of those guys are fit and informed.
For Wallaby coach Michael Checker, the match presented a different view. Replacement front rower Taniela Tupou was sin-binned during a crucial stage in the second half for a clean-out on Reinhard Elstad that was deemed illegal by New Zealand referee Paul Williams. This is Michael Checker reacting to how his team played as well as that controversial decision.
Well, I thought we did a lot of the things that we've been preparing. Like you watch a game and see we created opportunities where we scored two tries and both of them weren't given in the end. And I think just a lot of small things sort of went against us in that period as well that turned the momentum away. But I was happy that a lot of the things that we've been working on, we were able to bring out there. I thought our defence was, I know, you know, it was five tries, but our defence was good in a lot of the set the phase plays as well, and we've just got to learn how in that second half when we didn't have a lot of the ball, we were just a bit loose with it when we did have it, and that gave the momentum back to the other team. Yeah, I'll make it as the wrong call. The other guy should have been setting the sin bin. He went, the fourth official said he focused on the green player who came in with a shoulder charge, I don't know who it was. And then Taniela came in after that to get him with his arms wrapped at the right height. So I'm not sure if just big contact is a penalty these days, but that's a wrong decision.
But one of my best moments of the game was seeing Lizoko Boka run out for his first Springbok cap, knowing his journey and what he had to do to get there and make it this far in rugby, including sleeping on the floor of an unfurnished flat, having no money for 3 months, just to get a trial with the EP Kings, just inspired me and should inspire everybody else that was watching the game. But the moment of the press conference definitely went to Frans Steyn, who was stunningly candid and funny during his time with the members of the media. Now let me quickly give my views on Frans Steyn. When he came back into the Bok fold, since he last featured in the squad in 2017, I was highly, highly skeptical. I was not sure if his weight had improved, whether his ability and, dare I say, his drive was present. And I was not sure what questions he was going to answer within the squad. Was it fly half, inside center, or fullback? I also felt that his image rights issues with SA Rugby, which are a constant sticking point when he's called up, were going to create an unnecessary distraction. Now, having said that, and having seen him in action, and seen his demeanor, let me say this. He is by far the best inside center option we have in the current crop, without a doubt. He is shades ahead of Andre Esterhazen and miles ahead of Damien Dierlander, streets ahead of anybody else that can play 12 at the moment. And he is not even at peak physical shape. He is not even at the full understanding, to his admission, of what Rassie Erasmus wants from the squad. And I have to say this, he must start against the All Blacks in Wellington this weekend. Like I said, he is not at peak physical shape, but his physique can bend defenses out of shape, as he showed in the second half on Saturday. Off the field, he looks very relaxed, he looks mature, and he is enjoying being a South African and a Springbok again. It was refreshing, and it was a refreshing and a pleasant sight to see. But I want you to experience some of it yourself. This is Frans Steyn talking quite passionately about screw-ups.
Nee, dit is baie maklik om kokker te jaag. Maar nou, it's easy to screw up. But I mean, for me personally, if you just keep trying to come out, I mean, I missed more kicks in finals, losing finals than winning finals. But that's part of rugby. That's part of the career. That's part of everything you do. And that's why it's so tough to win finals and to win championships. It just doesn't come easily. So, and the screw-ups is part of building character, part of, I mean, we've been, the Springboks have been through ups and downs, and like, I don't know who's A or who's B team, but there's 14 guys overseas, and we still managed to beat Australia with 5 points. I mean, 2 years ago, who would have thought we would have been beaten Australia? I was sitting overseas. I wouldn't have said this. I mean, to be honest, even if I was in the squad, I mean, it's just unbelievable what Rassie and that SA Rugby and whatever that they did, and it's unbelievably special for the players that's here at the moment to see a young guy like all the, I mean, everybody. I mean, I told him earlier, like, scoring 2 tries on your debut. Look, if you score 1 try on your debut, that's massive. Yeah. And scoring 2, it's even bigger. So, yeah. So don't wish that screw up onto me, please.
Now, before I get to the special guest of the episode, and he is a very special guest, let me get into the formalities. Our upset and playmaker of the week. I will adjudicate this week's decision, but please don't bite my head off on Twitter. My upset of the week goes to Shane Lowry for dominating a field of in-form major winners to claim his first major title and win the British Open at Royal Portrush. He blew defending champion Brooks Koepka well out of the water. And my playmaker of the week goes to the Algeria national football team for being crowned AFCON champions. It wasn't the prettiest game against Senegal, but there is such a thing as winning ugly. Algeria certainly did that. But this is a country that toppled their long-standing dictator Abdelaziz Bouteflika earlier this year, and they have capped off a revolutionary year by becoming African champions. So it really, really, really means a lot to them, as their national team possess the spirit and heart of lions that they certainly are. Now, my guest this week joined us over Skype. He's a man from Lusikisiki and was the co-captain of the 2009 SA Sevens team that won its first World Sevens Series title under then-coach Paul True. He then joined the Southern Kings and played as an open side flanker before hanging up his boots and joining the coaching ranks at Western Province and later Borland. He is now the coach of Belfast Rugby Club in Christchurch and has become one of the coaches inside the giant Crusaders coaching factory. Now, you must remember that the Crusaders won their 3rd straight Super Rugby title under Scott Robertson, which was their 10th title overall in the history of the competition since it started in 1996. Now, that makes Scott Robertson, a young coach, relatively years-wise, coaching years-wise, a very, very successful coach, and he has to rank as one of the greats, right up there with Robbie Deans, who, of course, won about 5 or 6 titles with the South Same Crusaders. Now, I spoke to Paul Mbiyozo, who is our guest, a few weeks ago about his journey to New Zealand, his development as a coach, and learning his craft inside one of the best coaching systems in the world. I have to say, it's probably the best coaching system in the world. It's a fascinating conversation, and you will not want to be disturbed while you're listening to this. So, enjoy. Yeah, look, did you ever imagine that, you know, as a boy from Elusikisiki, that you'd end up in Christchurch as a rugby coach?
No. I think. Yeah, no, I can't say I ever had.
Yeah.
I think it was, the whole move here was kind of a spur, not a spur of a woman's thing, it's a woman to say. So I came here last year, on some personal development trip, you know, as a coach. So I came here last year, June, for months, so between June and July. So, halfway through June till halfway through July. My mate, Brad Moore, he's one of the Crusaders' assistants.
Mm.
So he linked me up with them. So, you know, I got to sit down in their meetings and watch how they operate and how they do things. And that was a learning curve, you know, how to do things. And, you know, I walked around the schools, met some schools, spoke to coaches of schools, coaches of clubs. Just a journey, some very, very good conversations with people around here, and but just purely rugby. And what I find is that the willingness to share information.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that was like, wow, man, this is good. So I remember sitting on the plane on the way back. Oh, my whole family came down, and sitting on the plane on the way back, I was like, look, I said to my wife, I've got to come back here.
Mm.
I don't know how or what, I've got to come back here.
Yeah.
So we flew home, and I think about 2 months later or something like that, it was an advertisement of a job, of a coaching position here. Yeah. I just put my name in there for shits and giggles, see what happens. funny enough, the guy that interviewed me, I'd met him one of the club sessions, and we had a great conversation. He's like, hey man, we met and talked, are you, is it really you applying? I said, yeah, it's me, you know.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, fast forward, I mean, a month later, you know, my family, nearly a year later, actually, my family's moved, packed our house up and rented it out and moved our furniture over here. Kids are in school over here now, and we're settling, it's becoming a home.
Yeah, it's incredible. An Eastern Cape man down in Christchurch, in the South Island of New Zealand.
Yeah, look, it is. Yeah, it was never part of the plan. But again, as I said, you know, it happened because I just had a good hunch about it when I was here. And I figured it's a good place to learn.
Yeah.
Learn a lot about myself. I think importantly to learn a lot about myself. Not just rugby, you know, coming out of my comfort zone. You know, I played all my rugby at home. You know, all the coaching I've done has been at home. And just coming out, you know, leaving your comfort zone and coming to try something very different.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, I had there was an option at hand at home, to take. It was very well considered, but, you know, we took this one, I think on the basis of, I wanted to find out more about myself as a person, first and foremost, and also as a coach. And along the way, you know, it's not a bad place to come in rugby, you know, because now I've got access to the best coaches in Super Rugby, you know. They allow me to come in and sit and listen and learn and ask questions, and they wanted to share some info that they probably don't share with many people around the world, you know. So, you know, I'm in that position where I can only grow. The worst that will happen is I'll grow as a person, I'll grow as a coach, you know, and learn some different ways of thinking and different ideas.
Yeah. Where was this opportunity in South Africa? Because I wanted to ask you about that opportunities, you know, my hope was that you didn't go to Belfast because the opportunities had actually run dry, which happens to a lot of, you know, dare I say black coaches, but you know, the opportunities are getting very, very limited. But how did you find opportunities back home?
Yeah, look, I guess wherever you go, well, maybe, you know, there's only so many coaching positions.
Yeah.
And yeah, South Africa is no different. Even here, you know, I mean, actually, I had a very good chat with a guy called Simon Nibone.
Okay.
He's like a specialist set piece coach. He has the scrums and lineouts. That's his speciality. And he said to me, you know, I've been coaching here, you know, for over, I don't know, 13 years, I think, since it. And I haven't really got an opportunity to go higher, per se. You know?
Yeah.
And sometimes I sit and wonder if, you know, is this what I want to do? Is this worth it? And he loves it. He said, I love it. And, you know, it's opportunity hasn't come yet. You know, and that's just the nature of the game worldwide. As far as me is concerned, you know, I guess I was very lucky when I started playing. Actually, what happened was that I played in the George Sevens thingy, okay, the Chiefs.
Yeah.
At some stage, I think it was 2014. If I'm mistaken, yeah, I think so. And Jerome Popote was there with the Kenyan team.
He asked me
what I'm doing. I said, no, I'm playing. I'm going to Cape Town. He said, you know, he needs someone to help him coach. That's when Kenya first played in the Vodacom Cup. And I was like, yeah, look, I'm more than happy to come help. You know, if you don't mind. Because Jerome obviously had a lot of jobs. And, you know, it's also part of province. So I'll do whatever he asks of me during the day. And he'll come late in the afternoon. And, and obviously the head coach runs the whole thing. And I was like, yeah, sure, why not? So, you know, I got to that stepping stone through Jerome. And I really enjoyed it. We missed out World Cup qualification by a point.
Jeez.
Which still irks me a little bit, but I don't really think about it. because it could have been World Cup. You could have gotten World Cup in 2015. If we had gotten a point.
That's tough luck.
Yeah.
Fascinating stuff. And did you go and then pursue your rugby badges after that? And how far up the coaching levels did you go?
Yeah. Obviously, that's the first thing you do, isn't it? I've got my World Rugby Level 3 coaching badge. So that's, I mean, obviously, I pursued level 2 and then got level 3 as well. And I came here last year, I did the International High Performance Course with the Crusaders. The next step, again, I think it was with these coaching badges, it's just a badge, really, you know, just a piece of paper. If you get an opportunity, you get an opportunity. If you don't, you don't, you know.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is. I'm not diminishing it at all, but because there's a lot of value in it, there's a lot of learnings in it. I know there's a level 4 here in New Zealand, which once I sort of got my bearings of the landscape and know who's who, you know, something I'll probably pursue as well.
Really?
You're learning something different.
Just a touch on that as well. Like, I didn't know they had a level 4. Is it their own unique course that is in higher regard than the IRB or World Rugby Level 3? How does it work?
Well, they call it the equivalent of World Rugby. It's the equivalent of Level 4 World Rugby.
Okay.
So I'm not sure if it's exactly the same as World Rugby Level 4, but they've got something of the same equivalent. I know in the UK they offer level 4. Yeah, again, something you know, I'd like to pursue because, again, you're just learning something different. You know, you're looking at things through a different lens. And if the opportunity does pop by, I'll grab it and run away with it.
Now, that 09 team, one of my cousins is there, Tobela Mdaga. He doesn't look like he was a player now, if you'd see him now. You know, there was Mzwandile Sticks. I think Neil Powell was part of that team as well, coached by Paul True.
Yeah.
How is it being part of the first SA Sevens team to actually take Sevens from this peripheral version of the sport that everyone else is like, okay, yeah, it's nice. But no one actually thought it was the real thing. Everyone thought Sevens is just for shits and giggles, for lack of a better word. It was like a modified version of touch rugby, really. That's how people saw Sevens back then. But then suddenly, Sevens just transforms and now we look to Sevens for trophies. We look to Sevens for Olympic medals. Commonwealth Games medals and everything else. It's a full-fledged rugby career. How was it back then?
Back then it wasn't as fashionable as it is now, for sure. it was just I came into the Sevens 2006. And again, it was just a welcoming environment from the playing perspective.
Yeah.
Having been part of the Stormers sort of wider group training, part of Western Province, you know, it was like you felt welcome. And the one thing about it is that everyone that came in there, you weeded yourself out. So what I mean by that is that you there was so much hard work that if you know, some guys couldn't handle it. Some guys, some guys who were superstars at 15, spent a week with us, and they just couldn't handle it. They couldn't handle the workload, you know. It was ridiculous. When I tell guys, we used to have 4 to 5 hour sessions straight. I'm not lying to you. We used to have 4 to 5 hour sessions straight. I'm training. And the first week was absolutely brutal. But once the body and the mind is just an amazing thing. But once you get used to it, it becomes a norm. It becomes what you do. And you get used to it. And how was it? Oh man, it was. You know, some of the times of my life were spent in those 4 years. I think the bigger, besides winning the trophy and all that other stuff, the biggest learning thing for me, which is to an extent to shape the way I coach and how I coach, was a culture we built.
Okay.
We did a 2 week camp in Australia. We spent a week up in Darwin playing a sevens tournament there, the hottest sevens in the world, and then we came down to Manly for a week.
Yeah.
And we had made plans to go into the city in Sydney for a nightlife, you know?
Yeah.
And then Paul says, hey, boys, let's just get together after dinner. I just want to chat about something. You need to just somehow look at, you know, it's probably half an hour maximum, we'll be out of there. And we, you know, because sitting there, everyone comes in already dressed to go out.
And you sprayed your cologne and everything, yeah.
Exactly, man. No, cologne, what cologne? No, you sprayed your eggs, my man. Or you brewed the essence of men.
Yeah.
So, you know, we sat there chit-chatting about what we wanted to achieve, you know, what is it that you want to achieve? And how we then achieve that goal, what step we need to take. And you know, before we knew it, we were 6 hours into the chat.
Jeez.
Now, later 6 hours into the chat, you know, so from 7 o'clock, before we knew it, man, it's like 1, nearly 2 o'clock in the morning. And we're just talking and talking until we were going to achieve. And we're in bed, and the next day again, we continued for another 4 or 5 hours, just talking. And at the time, we didn't realize what we were building a culture. We were building something that that will sustain the success you've seen today of the guys, so the guys that came after us.
Yeah.
And we came up, end of those 2 days or 2 day chats, you know, we came up with wanted to be pioneers of greatness. You want to be, I think it was Marius Schumann actually who came at the time. I was like, huh? Anyways, so someone who do something that's never been done, you know, and those 2 days probably changed the course of sevens for rugby in South Africa, because all of a sudden each and every one of us who was in the room was part of a squad, and subsequently the guys that came in, we knew what the standard was, you know, we knew what needed to be done, how did you work, or how did you push. And dare I say, you know, the success you see now was built over those 2 days. No disrespect to the people who were there before us, but every team that I coach, every team I'm involved in, whether I'm assistant or my head coach, the first thing I do is we need to understand exactly where we're going.
Yeah.
You know, I need to understand exactly how we're going to get there. You know, what steps we're going to get there. The example I use is like, what do you want to be like? If I ask you as a kid, what do you want to be when you grow up? He said to me, I want to be a doctor or a lawyer. Okay, cool. What steps need you to do to be a doctor? You know, first of all, you need to finish your trip. You know, you need to pass with a certain grade. I don't know what it is now, 80%, whatever the case may be. You know, then you need to go to university. You need to get applied to university, accepted to university. You do a number of years, you do this and this and this, and you become a qualified doctor. Or then from there, you can become a specialist. So there's always steps into what you're doing. The same as in sport, is that you've got to build, you know, brick by brick, layer by layer. Eventually, you know, you'll build something that's sustainable, something that will, you know, will keep churning out talent. As you can see with our servants, you know, we just keep producing player after player after player. But that's for me, you know, with the winnings, with everything that came with that, you know, those 2 days was something that shaped the way I think about coaching, the way I think about everything, actually, you know, until it comes to sports or comes to rugby specifically. Even some of the books that I'm reading, you know,
okay.
It's all culture related books, you know, how to build a culture, and biggest one being, you know, you gotta know why you're doing stuff.
Yeah.
And that's, if you know why you're doing stuff, then everything else, you know, becomes secondary, because you know where you're doing it and you know how to get there.
Yeah, it's quite incredible. You look at how many of those your former teammates went on to coaching careers. Of course, Neil Powell is the current SA Sevens coach, and he's won back-to-back World Series titles. Zwandile Stick did incredibly well as a junior coach at Eastern Province Rugby. Shot up, went straight to Springboks, and yeah, he's had his time at that level, you know, as would anybody. And you look at yourselves, Vuyo Zanga as well, who's carving out a neat little career for himself. He was obviously assistant coach to Paul Truett at some point. Do you think this that team has the potential, maybe in the long run, to actually influence South African rugby on a coaching perspective? You know how you get Scott Robertson in New Zealand, the Todd Blackadders, like they're generational, and you see them rise all in tandem, and they all believe in one philosophy, and in that way they've made New Zealand rugby as a whole stronger, not just one team.
Yes.
So do you think there's potential for that?
Oh, definitely there is. See, what I'm exposed to here is you must see who runs the Crusaders behind closed doors, so the behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same, like teammates of Scott Robinson, teammates of Top Blackheaders.
Yeah.
You know, guys who a guy called Angus Gardner. He's high performance. I know high performance. What is he? Oh man, I forgot his title now, but he's a guy pulling the strings behind the scene, you know? And those are guys who understand the culture of Crusaders specifically, and who were there at the foundation stage of the Crusaders.
Yeah.
What's built on. And I think I almost would say it's almost like a world, like a New Zealand-wide phenomenon.
Okay.
You find a lot of guys involved in the different unions that have been part and parcel of that union, you know, at some stage, and have contributed massively and understand the culture of what's you know what is required to be successful at that union. Not in any way, shape, or form saying that you have to have played for a side to be, you know, to lead it as a coach or be the coach or as a GM or whatever the case may be. I mean, there's cases of I think of about 3 or 4 guys who won World Cups who were never really players. I think coaches, you know, so that's another scale to it. But in saying that as well, I think you know, getting people who understand Rusty, for example, I think he understands the Bok culture. He's a Bok, you know. He understands. He's probably the smartest coach who South Africa's ever produced.
Yeah.
In terms of just obviously his IP, rugby IP is another level. There's scope for people who have achieved something great and can in turn contribute back into it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
At the same time, though, you know, it's gotta be, you know, it can't be for self-enrichment purposes.
Mm.
You know, you gotta have the wider vision of what you're trying to plow back into the game, into the sport, into the community. You can't be a get rich quick scheme.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
A better word, you know, it's like,
it needs
look,
to be
I'm
authentic.
Giving back because this is what this game did for me. One of the things actually that's happening here is that as a club, you have to have a first team and a second team, and some clubs around don't have first team, so they have a second team, so they play in the Div 2 league. And there was a vote recently, or a couple of years ago, but now it's came up again that those clubs should be shut down, because unless they get a Div 1 side, they should be shut down. And that was also my opinion. And I was like, well, I'm new here, so. But the first thing that came to me, you know, my gut response to it was, look, what about the community?
Yeah.
You know, because you shut the club down, what happens to the community? You know, the club, I don't even know how long the clubs have been in that community, you know. What about the people who put their heart and soul in that community and show that there is rugby, they enjoy rugby, they love rugby, the people who go there and watch every weekend, there's a rugby, you know? So, you know, I understand rugby's pro now and there's lots of money involved and sponsorship and stuff, you know, but still, there's always an element that, you know, you deal with people.
Yeah.
And you know, you deal with communities, and and as hard as it is, you must always put that, you know, ahead of the other stuff. I think, you know, one of the things I learned last year specifically was that people, I think it's Maya Angelou said that people always will forget what you say, people will forget what you made them do, but never forget how you made them feel.
Yeah, yeah.
And right then I was going through sort of not a rough time, but a very interesting time with my UCT at the time. And that thing came up, and I was like, holy shit, my whole coaching philosophy has been based around that.
Yeah.
But it wasn't as specific as that. And I was like, phew, all philosophy, all you go, you come in your philosophy.
Yeah.
And yeah, so in saying all of that, I think it, you know, definitely there's scope and room for guys who've been in successful cultures to plow back. And to whether it be SRB or whatever. But the key is obviously, you know, to understand, you have a vision, what the vision is.
Yeah.
You know, we're trying to grow the game, we're trying to get more players to come play, and it's about the people.
How have you found the cultural vibe there? You know, how are the race relations? How's the culture? What's it like?
Look, it's very well. I think first thing is very multicultural, because in the sense that you get Fijians, you get Samoans, you get Tongans,
yeah.
You get obviously New Zealanders, Maoris, you get You get a lot of Asians as well.
Yeah.
So it's very multicultural. One of the interesting things that I encountered when I first got here is that on my desk I found how to deal a little booklet.
Yeah.
On how to deal with especially the Pacifica players.
Yeah.
The Islanders, which is very interesting because they're very quiet and reserved and respectful people. You know, they don't say much, you know, and it's very hard to get anything out of them. That's one of my struggles as well at the moment. It's like, my club is full of, it's largely made up of Tongans, Samoans, and Fijians.
Yeah.
And Maori boys.
Yeah,
and even then it depends. If you a guy from the islands, you know, just came up here, it's very different from guys sort of been here for a couple of years
difference. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So, because they're very, very quiet. So anyway, this booklet sort of kind of gave me an idea, or gave me sort of like a front football, per se, like a better word. In terms of understanding these guys, who they are and what makes them tick. And I remember thinking, I was like, hey, at home, we have 11 ethnic groups. But it seems like, you know, there's nothing that caters for me as a Mposa, as a Mbondo, into the system. So I have to told the line, basically, or get in line, which I did all my career, basically.
Yeah.
I didn't care for much, to be honest. But I found it was very interesting, the fact that they're mindful enough to realize that, look, we're dealing with different people here who have different backgrounds and different religions, different beliefs. Yet they're great rugby players, but in order for them, let's find ways to get the best out of them. So one of those ways, you've got to go learn about them, their culture, what makes them tick, what makes them angry, what makes them happy, you know, yeah. What opens them up, how do you make them feel, how do you make them feel comfortable, open up and stuff like that. Every day is a learning day. And that's a good thing about it. Like any other job, it's got its frustrations sometimes, But even bad days are good days, as Peter Bless used to say.
Yeah, so we thought he was crazy when he said that.
It's always learning. It's always learning.
No, fabulous. Thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
No worries. Cheers, man.
Cheers.
Great day.
All right.
Cheers, bro.
That's it from me, Sboom Jikeliso, and you've been listening to the Sports Live podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Do also catch us on timeslive.co.za, as well as Sowetan Live, Business Live. We're also on Iono FM, the Apple Podcast Store, or wherever you get your podcasts. It could be Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, Pocket Cast, wherever. To connect with us, please use the hashtag SportsLive. Share your comments with us at TimesLive or at Sowetan Live on Twitter. A big thank you goes out to the Multimedia Live team led by Scott Peter Smith and producer Paige Muller, as well as the TESO Black Star Digital Sports Department headed by Mninawa Mchana Ntloko. Our sound and audio mixer is Innocent Manyike. From us at the Sports Live podcast, it's goodbye for now.